The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, I've started using Uber. And Uber is good. The cars are clean, the drivers are friendly, you just push the app and boom, a car turns up. But there's a problem with Uber, and it's this. After the ride, the driver will give you a rating, and you have to give the driver a rating. And to try to get the 5-star rating, you have to sit in the front seat and make polite conversation. And you have to do the same questions that the driver probably gets each and every time. How long have you been doing Uber? How's it going? What were you doing before Uber? And they have to ask you the same polite conversations. How's your day? How are you doing? And then what do you do for work? And that's the question I dread, because I have to take a big breath in. I go, I work for City Bible Forum. I give talks from the Bible about Jesus, and there is an awkward silence because no one wants to talk about religion and no one wants to have to meet a professional person in religious Christian ministry, because I am that guy. Because we don't know what to do with religious people. When we think of religious people, we think of moralists, self-righteous haters, and hypocrites. And if that's what you're thinking, you are in good company. Because that's also what Jesus thought. Now, for Jesus, I found this photo, and I think this is what Jesus would have looked like if he was around today, a short, tanned, Middle Eastern male who spoke Aramaic and Hebrew, who walked around the countryside of Palestine. And right now, our series is called The Jesus You Never Knew, because Christianity is exploding all over the world, in Africa, Asia, South America. So maybe it's time for us in the West to pause and think, what are they finding in Jesus that we have missed? So maybe it's time that we forget about the Jesus we thought we knew, the Jesus we grew up with, and rediscover the Jesus of the Bible. And if we rediscover the Jesus of the Bible, we might find these things. And our series of questions this month are these. Did you know Jesus was accused of partying too hard? Did you know Jesus was friendly with the seedy and corrupt? Did you know Jesus loathed religious haters and fakers? And did you know Jesus was more tolerant than you or I? And today is week 3, and our third question is this. Did you know Jesus loathed religious haters and fakers? And to look at this question, there'll be 3 parts to this morning's talk. First part, we'll look at what the Bible says about Jesus. Middle part, mistakes we might make about Jesus. And the final part of the talk, well, how would Jesus want us to respond to him? So let's begin with the first part of the talk. What does the Bible have to say about Jesus? Now, I live on a quiet cul-de-sac, but every night young people will come along in their cars and they sit there eating their McDonald's takeaway, and then they just leave their rubbish on the street. And I hate that. And there are many things I hate. I hate catching a train and people talking loudly on their mobile phones. I also hate on public transport what is called the man spread. And the man spread is a thing. The word has actually made it into the Oxford English Dictionary. I hate the man spread. Well, if Jesus was around today, I guess he would hate the McDonald's wrappers. He would hate loud people on mobile phones. He would hate the man spread as well. But there's one thing he would have hated even more. And there was a certain type of religious people. So let's look at the Jesus of the Bible. In Luke 19, we read this. When Jesus entered the temple courts, he began to drive out those who were selling. And Jesus said to them, "My house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers." Jesus hates religious people who use it for making money. But there are other religious people that Jesus hates. We read in Matthew 23, he says to religious leaders, "You appear righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." Jesus hates people who use religion as a facade for looking good on the outside, but deep down their hearts are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. And then we come to this section of the Bible, which we've just heard, Luke 18. And it's a famous story of the Pharisee and the tax collector, where we meet a Pharisee. And this is what he would have looked like if it was around today. A respectable, good-looking, religious family man. And he turns up to church and he prays this out loud. Dear God, I thank you I'm not like other people. I'm honest. I don't lie. I don't cheat. I haven't killed anyone. And I haven't cheated on my wife. I'm a family man. I'm generous with my money. And look, I go to church. And he says, I thank you I'm not like this man, the tax collector. And the tax collector, I reckon today he would have been like Jesse from Breaking Bad, making money but in spurious, dubious ways. The tax collector, in contrast, he looks at his feet and he prays to God and says, oh God, have mercy on me, I am a sinner. And then Jesus says, this man gets it right, not the other man, this man gets it right. And then, whoa, how? And Jesus gives us the punchline. Because whoever lifts himself up before God, God will bring down. But whoever lowers themselves before God, God will raise this person up. Well, from this, we learn there are three mistakes we can make with Jesus. And the mistakes are what the religious man does. So the first mistake is this: to somehow think we are better than who we are. Now, as you can see, I am a short Asian. But I didn't realize how short I was. I thought, you know, I'm still of average height. There are people taller than me, yes, but I am of average height. Until I went to med school and they gave us all the data and you could plug in your height into this algorithm and I found out I'm the lowest percentile. So in a room of 100 men, I'm the shortest male in that room. I'm in the lowest percentile. I thought I was taller than what I was. I was deluded, but this is quite common. Jonathan Haidt, in his book, The Happiness Hypothesis, says we're all deluded. We all think we're better than what we are. Apparently, 100% of drivers rate themselves as above average, which is impossible by definition. Only 50% of us can be above average drivers, and yet 100% of drivers think they are above average. 100% of us rate ourselves as more generous with charities than what we think we are. We give a higher figure in our heads when we say what we gave to charity last year than what we really did give in reality. 84% of university lecturers rate themselves as above average when it comes to lecturing. 70% of uni students rate themselves as above average when it comes to leadership qualities. And then when they do surveys with husbands and wives and they ask the wives, what percentage of the housework do you think you do? And they ask the husband, what percentage of the housework do you think you do? And you add those figures together, you get 120%, meaning we're deluded. We think we're doing more than what we're actually doing, which is a problem. And Jesus says the same thing, Matthew 7. He says this to religious people. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye, and yet you pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, hey, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take out the plank out of your own eye. That's the first mistake. Religion makes us think, hey, I'm better than who I am. And then religion makes us make a second mistake. It makes us judge other people and criticize other people. I have a friend, she plays piano, and she's so good at it, she went to the con and studied at the con. And these days, she teaches children piano lessons. And nothing against piano lessons, but I said to her, hey, didn't you go to the con? Shouldn't you be in the Australian orchestra or something? And she said to me, that's like me asking you, hey, how come you don't play for the Australian Wallabies? And I thought, yeah, she's got a point. You know, there's no way I'm good enough for the Australian Wallabies. Well, I used to think that, but now, oh my goodness, the Australian Wallabies, when I watch them play, I'm yelling at the TV screen, I could do better. I could do better. I would not have dropped the ball. I would not have missed the tackle. I would have scored the try. I could have done better. See, it's very easy to criticize other people, but we do it all the time. we look at the SUV and think, oh, please, look at your footprint that you're leaving. You should drive a hybrid car like I do. We look at the people with the plastic shopping bags and think, oh, please, why don't you have an eco-friendly bag like I do? We look at the person with the divisive flags and we think, oh, please, you bigot, you racist, why can't you be inclusive and tolerant and enlightened like I am? So we're very quick to criticize, and religion makes us do this even more. We look at people and say, oh, look at what they're doing in my church. Really? Look how disrespectful that is. So somehow religion makes us judge and criticize other people. And there's a third thing that religion does, and it's this. It makes us think we can earn our favor before God. When I went through primary school, I was that kid. I would always have my hand up going, pick me, pick me, pick me. I know the answer. I know the answer. I know the answer. I was that kid in your primary school class. I was that kid who would always finish the work first and say, Miss, I finished my work. Can I have more work, please? And I was that kid that would say, Miss, you forgot to give us homework. Why would I beat that kid? Because somehow I thought this would impress the teacher. It'll gain her attention, win her favor, merit me maybe some favoritism in her eyes. She would see my performance and maybe she would favor me and maybe think I'm better than who I am. But what it's done, it's just turned me into a performing puppy dog doing tricks, like begging before the teacher. But that's what religion might do to us. We might think, hey, God, look at me, look at me. God, I'm at church. God, look at me, I'm praying out loud. God, look at me, I'm singing a hymn. God, look at me, thinking somehow God is noticing and we're winning, gaining his favor, maybe even finding a blessing from God because he will notice us. That's the mistake that religion does to us. So how does Jesus want us to respond? Well, the answer comes in the example of the tax collector. And we can learn two things from the tax collector. And it's this. The first thing is this. Let's be honest with ourselves. Be honest with ourselves. We are sinners. Let's be honest with ourselves. I shared with you a while ago, I used to own an Alfa. And the problem with Alfas is they're Italian and they rust. And so every year to get it through Reggio, I would just paint over the rust. And the rust would disappear. And I'll get it through another year's of Reggio. But of course the rust will bubble back through the paint. And then I have to repaint it each year to get it through Reggio. But the rust would always come back. And we've got to be honest with ourselves. Just like my car had a problem with rust, we have a problem. Our hearts are corrupted. There's shame in our lives. There are secrets. We're not the people we say we are. We're not the people we want to be. We fall short of where we need to be. We've let down our friends. We let down ourselves. And you could say we've even let down God. We are short of where we should be, could be, and need to be. We're not who we say we are to our friends and even to ourselves. So we need to be honest with ourselves and say, hey, we have a problem. And the tax collector calls it sin. We have a problem with corruption, shame, and sin in our hearts. And no amount of painting it over with being decent family people, religious acts of duty can cover up this problem in our hearts. And the second thing we need to do, which the tax collector does, is this. Just cry out for help. The tax collector says, God, have mercy. In other words, help me, God. I need you to rescue me. I think I shared earlier, I have a friend called Pierre. Pierre is a strong open ocean swimmer. He has gone in open ocean races. And one day, he went to Bronte on a big surf day. It was a big surf day. He thought, I'll just go out for an open ocean swim. But it was a big surf day, and the rip just took him out. And it took him to a place they call the whirlpool, where it just held him under the water, and he would be able to just come back, get another breath of air before he's pushed down under the water again, gets up, get another breath of air, and he thinks, oh my gosh, this is it. I am drowning. And he said, you know, the whole bit where your life flashes before your eyes, it does. He says, this is it. And then he said he came to this moment where he realized he had to stick his hand up and call for help. And he said the instant he put his hand up, that was the most humbling moment of his life. And the thing we have to come to is this. Can I come to that most humbling moment of my life to realize, you know what? I need help. I need Jesus. I need him to rescue me. And it is a humbling moment. But that's Jesus' point. That's his punchline. If we try to lift ourselves before God, God, look at me, look at me, look at me, God will bring us down. We fall short of where we need to be. But if we can humble ourselves before God, God have mercy, then God will lift us up. He will rescue us. And we need to come to that humbling moment of our lives to realize, you know what? I can't be who I need to be. I'm going to need Jesus. So today we've re-met the Jesus of the Bible, the Jesus who loathes religious haters and fakers, because religion can make us make mistakes. It makes us think we're better than who we are. We criticize others, and we think we can gain God's favor by our religious acts of duty, when what Jesus wants from us is this, to be honest with ourselves, we have a problem, and then to come to that humbling moment where we call out to Jesus for help. I shared last year that I've come to this stage of life where, just a few years ago, I went to a wedding. As I'm sitting there waiting for the bride to come in, and I see her come in, then I see her father walk her into the wedding, I went, oh my gosh, it's happened. I'm a friend of the parents, not of the bride getting married. I've become that guy. I've moved into that stage of life. Now I'm on the friend of the parents' table, you know, at the reception, the ones who talk through the speeches. I am now on that table. Wow, when did this happen? Like, I have moved up a stage of life. And I've also come to that stage of life where at the wedding reception, at the party, the banquet afterwards, my wife says to me, you are not allowed to dance. You cannot dance because you embarrass me when you dance. Because apparently I still do that thing with the hands and the thing with the teeth when you dance, the overbite. So it says, you cannot dance. And I thought, on the first hand, it's quite insulting to be told you cannot dance. It's quite humbling to be told you cannot dance and your wife is not going to be seen in public dancing with you. But then I thought, but at the same time, it's quite liberating to know my wife loves me not because of my dancing. She loves me just for who I am. And it's the same thing with us. Can we come to that humbling moment to realize, you know what, Jesus doesn't love me for what I can do, for my religious acts of duties. And it's quite liberating to know, you know what, he loves me just for who I am, not for what I can do for him. He loves me too much to leave me the way I am. Every day is a day where bit by bit he makes me more like him, but he loves me just the way I am.
If you humble yourself, you will be exalted. Mm. What does that mean practically day by day? Mm. What does humbled look like? What does exalted look like? Mm.
Well, I think I'll answer by saying apparently the two most destructive qualities we can have as leaders is pride and insecurity. So pride, this thing of this self overinflated worth, but at the same time I need to keep elevating myself to prove my status, and insecurity. So I fear the success of others, and I'm always fearing whispers behind my back, and always a constant need to prove myself. So pride and insecurity are very destructive qualities, especially in leaders, when what we really need are the two opposite qualities, humility and security. Humility, just to be honest with ourselves. You know, I'm not as amazing as what people think I am, and I'm okay with that. And security, in that I'm okay with who I am, and I don't fear the success of others. Instead, I celebrate the success of others. And I think this is what the gospel, Jesus in the Bible, gives us. Humility. I can finally be honest. I am broken. I am not as amazing as what people think I am. I can tell my children I'm not an amazing father. Please don't grow up to be who I am. I can tell my wife, hey, I'm not the amazing husband you think I am. So I can be honest. I can be honest. And that's just a beautiful feature to have. And I can be honest because I know my security is not found in my performance, but it's found in the status that Jesus can give me and the performance that Jesus does on my behalf. So I have humility and security. And it's just a great double feature to have to navigate through all areas of life.
So kind of think Donald Trump and do the opposite.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Stan. That was a great answer. Mm-hmm. This question is getting at perhaps more the psychology. We can be guilty without feeling guilty. We can be forgiven without feeling forgiven.
Yeah, we had a similar question last week. And yes, we can be guilty without feeling guilty. And I said, in a room full of lawyers, we all understand that, because guilt is an objective, external, legal, forensic concept. It's got nothing to do with how I feel. It's a status. I am guilty. Just like my Australian citizenship is a status, is a legal status. It's got nothing to do with how I feel. So when I try to re-enter Australia, the customs officer isn't going to ask me, how do you feel today? Are you feeling Australian? And based on my feelings, he lets me into Australia. And I'm like, no, it's a status. There's a passport. And guilt is the same. There's a status that of innocent or guilty. But interestingly, the Bible gives us many concepts of sin besides just guilt and forgiveness. It says it's also corruption and then cleanliness, or brokenness and then restoration, or powerlessness and then power, empowered. So there are feeling components to sin as well as just guilt, which is an external feelingless concept. And forgiveness is the same. So yes, I might be forgiven and not feel forgiven, just like I might be Australian and not feel Australian. And I think that's a beauty. I know my status is secure and it's not based on my feelings. But the Bible has a great, and the Bible explains this through two concepts, through two blessings we get from Jesus. One is justification, and that's our objective status of innocent, not guilty, that Jesus gives us. But then there's a subjective blessing called sanctification, and it's holiness, cleanness. And where bit by bit, God makes our internal subjective, I think, reality bit by bit match our external reality, where bit by bit we become more like Jesus, bit by bit we become who we really are externally.
Stuart, speak up.
Yeah, so the question is God humble, and how does this work? Because we're expected to glorify him and worship him. And so somehow our ultimate value and purpose is found in glorifying and declaring the worth of God. And I say a great example of this is when I was living in America, it was the 2000 Sydney Olympics. And before the Sydney Olympics, Australia was barely a blip on the consciousness of Americans. But then Kathy Freeman won the 400 metres. And they were just showing that all over America, Kathy Freeman winning the 400 metre race, and got everyone talking about Australia in America. So what Kathy Freeman did there was glorify Australia. And I say that's our life as well. We glorify God. We get people declaring the praises of God. But then how does this fit with God being humble? So on the one hand, he is God. So the whole of the universe is designed to declare his worth. But somehow we're creating his image, and we're meant to be humble and self-effacing. So is God humble and self-effacing? Well, he is. This is an interesting thing, because the Bible reveals God to us as three persons, the Trinity, Father, Son, and the Spirit. And it's interesting, each one of these persons is always trying to divert attention to the other one. So Jesus, the Son, is trying to glorify the Father. The Father is trying to get things summed up under the Son. And the Holy Spirit, I remember my theology lecturer, Bruce Smith, saying, he is like, if someone carries in front of you, let's say I'm carrying a portrait of Peter Caldor, so all you see is Peter Caldor, and you think, where am I? Well, I'm just the little fingertips on the side, and the Holy Spirit's almost the same. He's always carrying this portrait of God around, the Father or the Son. You think, well, where's the Holy Spirit? Oh, he's sort of behind the scenes. They're the fingertips you can see of him, because the Spirit is so self-effacing as well. So it's interesting, within the Trinity, that the persons of God are quite self-effacing, always trying to deflect attention away to one of the other persons. Yes? In Deuteronomy, God declares himself to be a jealous God. And so there's that component of his personality. I think you'd be humble and jealous at the same time. So, yeah, that's right. So I'm humble to my children and my wife. Like, I'm honest with them for, who I am. But at the same time, I'll be jealous if my children went and found another father or my wife went and found another husband. So I think you can be humble and jealous at the same time. I didn't hear.
Yeah, human frailties. You mean jealous?
Oh, okay. Well, there can be human frailties, and maybe we can use good feelings, good emotions, and good concepts, and use them in a wrong, corrupt way. But at the same time, we find those qualities in God. He says, I am jealous. And that seemed to be a good thing. Good thing to have a jealous God. And I think I would want... I would want my wife to be jealous as well. You know what I mean? Like, because I remember watching The House of Cards, and, you know, you have Kevin Spacey, and you have the wife, and she cheats on him. She has this long affair, and he discovers, he comes back, but he's just indifferent. And she said to him, I thought you would be more angry. And she was hurt that he wasn't more angry. In other words, he didn't love her. If he had loved her, he would have been rightfully angered, and he would have been jealous for her love. So the lack of jealousy, the lack of anger, was actually from a lack of love. So it's interesting that God shows his ultimate quality to be love. And maybe these things are stemming from love. So true love results in true anger and true jealousy. And a problem would be no anger and no jealousy.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.